name is Sky Turner. I'm from Wexford and I joined the Shona Youth Project about 2 years ago now. I would advise anybody listening to this to constantly be improving and working on yourself while also fully embracing your own personality and to not try to be anybody else, because then you won't end up liking yourself very much. If you spend all your time worrying about what other people feel about you, you'll never know how you feel about yourself. So what you should do is constantly realize how you feel about yourself and your situation always, because your happiness and self-improvement are the priority.
Hi and welcome to the last episode of Series 1 of Tell Me About It, a Shona Project podcast. I'm your host, Samantha Tibaldo. This week, Twitter queen, leopard print lover and proud activist Holly Shortall joins me on the final episode. Holly talks to me about dropping out of college, giving every job 100%, her journey to activism, and how she uses her platform and her privilege. Let's hear her tell me about it. So Holly, you work in marketing, you are a social media queen, and you love activism. How would you describe yourself?
I think you did a good job there. How do I describe myself? That's a good question. Yeah, well, like as in like a little bio or literally how would I describe myself?
How would you describe yourself?
Oh gosh, like that's a good question. Maybe slightly immature to a degree, like in terms of social media and stuff. I like having a laugh. I like having fun. I'm not very serious. Maybe that's what I should say. Not immature, just not a very serious person. Maybe quite self-deprecating. Is that the word?
Is it
self-deprecating?
Yeah. I can see it, but like, is it? I always thought it was.
Let's just say I like taking the piss out of myself. Yeah. Probably easier. I just like to have fun with my friends. I'm not a very serious person. Kind of still feel like I'm about 19 or 20. I'm 31. I guess that's how I would describe myself.
So you say that you still feel like you're 19. How were you like when you were a teen?
How was I? Well, I think there's probably quite a difference between how I was when I was, say, like 13, 14, 15 to how I was when I was like 18, 19, 20. I probably spent the majority of my childhood wanting to grow up, like wanting to be like 18, 19, 20 so I could just do whatever I wanted. I hated being told what to do, whether that was by my parents or in school. I just didn't do very well with being told what to do. So I was probably very cheeky at the lower end of the teen years, and then kind of maybe quite bold, like maybe a bit unruly, a bit, what's the word, just a bit of a wagon. Like I just didn't listen to my parents and I'd be off out doing, sneaking out and doing whatever I wanted to do. When I got a little bit older then I felt really like, oh, I'm very mature now. Like, so, you know, I moved out when I was like 18. Into a house with a couple of other people, and like got a full-time job and stuff. So I was very kind of, I didn't really do the whole college thing. So I kind of went from being like a little teenager into just being like 19, 20.
Yeah. Did you always know what you wanted to do, or was the college thing not planned?
No, I literally my whole life I wanted to do fashion design. I thought that was what I wanted to do. I loved drawing. I think in my head, I always just assumed that my love for drawing would like translate into being physically capable of making clothes. And when I actually came to it, I did get into a dressmaking course, and I hated it from the day I started. I loved the drawing classes in there and the illustration and stuff, but the actual physical like technicalities of making clothes, I'm not a mathematical person whatsoever, so I just couldn't get my head around it. So kind of felt like a bit of a failure in that regard, but it just wasn't for me. So I just did the finished 1 year. It was like a 2 or 3 year course. And then I just never went back to college then. I was just like, you know what? I just loved earning money.
Money was on your mind.
Yeah, I think I was just like, in my head, I was like, I've literally just been, you know, working, you know what I'm saying, quote unquote, working in school for free. That's how I looked at it. I was like, I'm giving up 8 hours of my day every day for the last, you know, 15 years or whatever it was. I just want to go out and earn some money now and just be, like, I just wanted to be really independent. Quite an actually, that's another word I would use to describe myself, as I'm very independent. I don't like depending on anybody for anything.
So was it a struggle for you to find a job without a degree? Because a lot of the jobs that you're in now, like the marketing and all that, like all of their like bios, like they're like, you need to have like a degree in marketing or communications.
Do you know what? I actually think I'm really lucky, and it's why I try not to give too much, you know, like the leaving cert comes out, everyone's giving a 2 cents. Well, I did this and I got that. Like, the world has changed dramatically from when I was 18, 19, when I left school, basically, to people leaving school now. It's a different place. There's so much more. There's so many more people finishing school. There's, you know, there's so many more industries. I mean, social media was kind of only kicking off there. It's like the biggest thing now at the moment, and kind of has been for the last couple of years. So there's a lot more competition now. For me, I kind of just fell into this career. So when I said that I kind of left school, I started working in retail, and I worked really hard. Like, every job I've always had, I've always worked really hard at it. So I've kind of, for want of a better word, kind of excelled in, even if it was being a sales assistant, I was one of the top sales assistants, and I was making, you know, this is during the Celtic Tiger, like a fortune for these shops. And then, you know, going on to do visual merchandising. So kind of growing in that field and like winning awards for that with like the different companies that I worked for. And then I got into working in a social media agency, and then one of my clients took me in house, and then I moved over here and got the job as marketing manager. But it's been at the same time, somebody could probably go to college for 3 years and graduate and get the job that I'm in now, maybe, or something similar. Whereas I've been working, I worked for like 10 years. So it's, you know, it's whatever way you want to do it. There's ways around things, I think. But yeah, I think at my age, 31, like, no one's ever asked me if I have a degree or anything like that. I think it might be slightly more applicable to other careers maybe, or younger people. Yeah. It's not personally held me back, but I know it's a different world now. So
speaking of fashion, you were on RTE Style Wars. What was that for, like, for you? I know you said before, like, you tweeted about it and you're like, you haven't watched it at all.
I was very young when I did that. So that was like 10, 11 years ago now. Completely different person, as I said. No, I was very independent, like, thought I was, you know, very independent, thought I was the best at everything. And that kind of came across, I think, when I was on the show. You know, you're filming with 10 big personalities. Everyone wants to win. And you're filming for like, you know, 2 or 3, 4 days a week. And then that is translated into like a 45 minute slot on TV. So when only maybe your kind of bad parts, or, you know, not the nicest things you've kind of said are shown, it is actually a bit, I won't use the word traumatizing, but it is a little bit difficult to look back on that as a positive thing, because I didn't enjoy the output. I enjoyed doing the show, but then I remember watching the first episode and just being like, oh my God, like, who even is that girl? I mean, don't get me wrong, nobody put any words in my mouth. Everything that was shown,
it's just the way they edited it, yeah.
It's just the way those shows are edited. It kind of made me realize to kind of take reality TV with a pinch of salt, because you kind of, there's narratives that can be very easily.
Would you ever go back to do a reality show?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's very much to be gained from doing it. I mean, even that was, you know, no shade to, I know you said it was RTE, it was actually TV3, no shade to TV3 and the production company, but it was like the lowest budget production. I mean, the prize was just shocking. We didn't find out what the prize was until 3 of us were in the final, so we didn't actually know. And it was like,
so what was the incentive then for you guys?
Well, it was the kind of sold to us that you were going to win a job with a designer, and I kind of thought, like, are you like, I think it was, you win a job with a big fashion house or something like that. So I was just like, grand, I'll apply for this. And then when it came to us, when we were in the semi-final, there was like 3 of us left, and the producers told us that the job was like a 6-month contract in London with Karen Millen. and Oasis working in their head office. And I was like, that's not really what I signed up for. Like, I'm 20. Like, I don't really want to move to London. I've never had any desire to move to London. So it was kind of like, I didn't want to win it anyway. I kept, like, was runner up in it. And I had my last episode that I was in, I think was quite nice. And I kind of had like, kind of the narrative kind of changed, and the work that I'd done was good or whatever. And they were happy with it. So I went out on a positive note, but now I could never watch it back. Ever. Never, ever. It's been 10 years. Excuse me. I just won't do it.
Yeah, that's just in the archives, not touching that at all.
No, it's gone.
Okay, but something from your past again is that you were an illustrator. Are you still doing drawings?
Not really. I feel like I've had about 10 different lives. Like,
yeah, I know. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Not at the moment. Just because I'm kind of busy, but I just kind of fell out of love with doing that. I kind of started doing celebrity illustrations, and this was between the kind of time frame between working in retail and then getting that job in the social media agency. There was kind of a period of 2 years where I was like, you know, writing different bits and pieces. I was on Snapchat. I had like 30,000 followers or something, or 20,000 followers on Snapchat at the time. And, you know, my Twitter was growing and stuff. So I was being like commissioned to write for different newspapers and bits and pieces and illustrations and stuff. And I think when I was doing my own little, like, you know, just, I just feel like drawing something, so I'm going to draw something. I really enjoyed it. But I think a lot of the time when you turn your kind of passion, like the thing that you kind of would do to chill out on like a Sunday morning or after a stressful day, when you turn that into your full-time job, it is very easy to grow to kind of not like doing it. And yeah, I went on a couple of voluntary trips at the end of 2015, and I'd never really done anything like that before. Something just kind of switched in me where I was like, I don't really want to work in the fashion industry anymore. It's not fulfilling me personally in any way. It's not making me happy. I don't feel like I'm contributing like literally anything to the world. Like, what, you know, what am I going to do? So that was kind of just a bit of a wake up call for me. And then I was like, right, well, you know, I need to get a full-time job and find a way to sustain myself. And I was just very lucky that I've ended up kind of in the job that I'm in now. But I was in a couple of different activist groups over the years, like for, you know, refugees and asylum seekers and migrants, whites and stuff like that. And then lots of stuff with different LGBTQ groups as well. So because I had a full-time job and a salary, I was able to then spend some evenings doing voluntary stuff to kind of help other people. But I wouldn't have probably really been able to do that when I was working for myself in the fashion industry.
Yeah, so when did you branch out then to activism? What made you realize that fashion isn't for you, it's not fulfilling me, and you decided to put your energy into like activism?
I think a real turning point for me was when I did go over to Calais, which is the refugee camp in Calais in France in 2015. And like I said, I'd never really done anything like that before, and it changed my perspective on a lot of things. I'm not going to talk about it too much because I'm very cognizant of, you know, this white savior complex and stuff like that. But I think it made me realize that I was probably better off spending my time thinking about people who maybe had less than me than people who had more than me, if that makes sense. So like, instead of, you know, drawing the Kardashians and watching, or, you know, and there's nothing wrong with doing any of that stuff. This is just obviously me personally, what I was spending my free time doing. It's like, I remember coming home on the ferry and I had a deadline with a newspaper I was working at the time. And it's like, oh, was it, you know, it was like the top 10 things we're all talking about this week. And it was like, I had to write about Khloe Kardashian's new book. And I'm literally doing this like on an 18-hour ferry on the way home from being literally in a refugee camp for, you know, 5-6 days. And I was just like, just disassociating from that. I was just like, this is madness. Like, I think it just, something just switched in me. And I thought, well, you know, maybe instead of doing this, I could apply those, you know, my love for social media, or, you know, being able to like write and stuff, to different groups. So like maybe running a page for, you know, I was running the Ireland's Calais Refugee Solidarity page for, you know, a couple of years, probably doing blogs, social media, all that kind of stuff. So I think, yeah, just something just kind of switched in me. Yeah. And it was around then, I think. So what's that, like about 5 years ago?
But you have such a huge social media following. Do you ever feel the need to filter or tone yourself down a bit?
Yeah, I do, definitely. Like, I mean, unless I'm extremely angry about something, like I try not to curse and stuff, because, you know, I do have my, so I'm the marketing manager for Manchester Pride, which is, you know, one of the kind of leading LGBTQ charities in Britain. So I would, you know, I wouldn't be effing and blinding. You know, I would maybe be a little bit more aware of maybe, you know, calling out like certain publications, because I could have to be emailing them.
Yeah.
Next week to say, can you write a story about this, or can you, you know, I'm following up on this press release, can you, know, whatever it is. So I think just I'm aware of having to be a little bit professional, I think, you know, but not completely like changing who I am or anything like that. But yeah, I think, you know, there's an element of just having to watch me step a little bit, which is not a bad thing as well, because you don't know who's watching as well, you know, that kind of way. There's always somebody looking to trip you up.
Yeah.
It, so
so I know you said that like the whole white savior complex thing. I think it's so important to use your voice and know your privilege. There's so many bloggers and people that have huge platforms in Ireland that I don't think they're using it. What is the importance of using your voice as a white person?
Yeah, I mean, and obviously I'm not just white, I'm also straight, and I'm cis as well. So I identify as the gender that I was, you know, born into. So there's kind of, there's like different degrees of levels of privilege that I benefit from. The importance of using your, it's to me something I've really noticed, something that kind of changed in myself recently from listening to Black people and BAME people of colour, LGBTQ people, trans people, is I don't necessarily have to use my platform to have my opinion on things. My opinion on things is actually quite irrelevant, but what I can do is use my platform to share maybe a tweet or a blog or a news piece that a Black person has written, or that, you know, something that a trans person has done. I don't always have to place myself at the forefront of that and go, well, you know, here's my opinion on this, that and the other, because it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. I think it's far more beneficial when you have that platform to go, look at this amazing thing that this amazing person has done. And not even doing it, just retweeting it, and that being the kind of platforming. And I think it's really important. And I mean, obviously, there's always so much more to learn and stuff. So I'm not obviously saying I'm perfect or anything like that. But I think that's just something that I've learned recently. And I guess as well, that kind of leads to, you know, a place where you're kind of mostly sharing positive things and or lived experiences, because I have absolutely no idea what it is like to not be white and not be straight and not be a cis person. So again, it just doesn't really matter what I have to kind of say on these things.
Because especially with the Black Lives Movement and everything, people were like blaming, like they were pointing fingers at each other, being like, oh, you're only piggybacking on like the whole bandwagon and you're not actually doing anything. I think it's really important to just share the things rather than being like, this is my thoughts on it.
I think it's like, at the same time, you can't really pressure people to do things on your time. I mean, like, obviously there's, you know, certain influencers where you would kind of think, you know, you could probably share something or say something. But a lot of the time, like, people just, they don't know. They don't know what to say, and they're afraid to kind of say the wrong thing. And I think that's privilege in itself, is that, like, the only fucking thing that we have to worry about is putting our foot in it as white people. Or, you know, or me personally, like, if thinking of, God, maybe I've said the wrong thing, or, you know, I shouldn't have tweeted that. And it's like, the worst thing that could happen to me is that I just get like a pylon on Twitter. Like, no one's going to racially abuse me because, you know, I'm white. Like, no one is going to misgender me because, you know, and even if they did, it wouldn't affect me because I'm not trans, non-binary. So it's like, what I'm trying to say is, I think, yeah, I think the best thing to do in those situations is to not put yourself under that spotlight and instead just share the voices. And I saw some amazing stuff. Like, I did see like loads of different influencers, like literally handing their platforms over to to Black people, especially during that movement over those couple of weeks and months, and just saying, tell us your story. Yeah. What do you have to say? Because, you know, I want my audience to hear it. So I think there's definitely, I think this year has been a big learning for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's so many changes this year, especially. But I want to talk about your big changes. I know you turned 30 last year, because I remember listening to your podcast and you kept going on about like how you're already 30, even though you're only 29. You went on for like the whole series of the podcast, I'd say. But what were like, what, like 20s, like that's a really big decade. Like, what was like that learning curve for you like?
God, do you know what? I was actually mad, like, because even when we were talking there about all the stuff that I did, I'm like, I literally feel like I've had about 10 different lives. Big learning curves. I mean, if I could give one piece of advice, it's just be nice to everybody that you, you know, within reason, that you kind of come across professionally, because you just never know when A, you're going to need something or a favor or whatever, or B, when you're going to run into people like that again. I mean, when I was younger, I mean, I had jobs that I walked out of. I just walked out the door and just did not do. And I could never go back into those shops.
Yeah.
And like for years, I just couldn't go back into them. And you, or you'd see someone and you'd be like, Jesus Christ, mortified. So I'd say, yeah, that. And, you know, maybe I wish I'd maybe thought about certain things before, like before making rash decisions like that. Because, you know, and you're left with no money and no salary and stuff like that. And I think maybe just thinking a little bit more and being like, right, okay, I've accepted that I don't like this job and I don't like how I'm being treated, but, you know, maybe don't leave that job until you've got another one lined up. And I think as well, like, you know, just working hard at everything you do. I think it doesn't matter if you work in, and I'm just going to use it as an, like, just as an example, in a supermarket or a post office, or if you work in marketing or you're self-employed or whatever it is, like, there's no job that you can't do really well at, I don't think. Do you know that kind of way? Mm. Like you can be good at anything. Like, I worked in retail and I know some people would look down on that, but I could have probably stayed in retail and been in an office in feckin' New York working for Gap or something like that. I just didn't want to. But I think even if you've not got that degree or whatever it is, there's always ways where you can excel in any career pretty much, and build your way up. So wish I'd known that, or maybe spoke, you know, not I wish I'd known that, but looking back now, that's probably something that I learned. God, no, really, what else? I mean, I think I probably spent a long time resenting Dublin and how bloody expensive it is. So I'm so glad that I've moved over here, even though I moved over, what, 2 months before. Yeah, I mean, I have to say, the other thing I'd say is, right, you always hear these, like, people saying, oh, your school years are the best years of your life. And then people, you also hear, your 20s are the best years of your life. It's all bullshit. Mm. Every year of your life is a good year. Do you know what I mean? I would definitely not say my 20s were the best years of my life at all. They were grand. They were fine, but I'm having a great time now. When I'm 40, I can end up back and winning the lottery. Like, do you know what I mean? And then I'll have, what, the best 10 years of my life or 20 years, whatever it
is. Well, you said that you were like resenting Dublin and everything. Mm. Has moving away from Dublin made you appreciate more?
If I'm being honest, not really. It's kind of made me realize what a bad state it's in. When I look at the initiatives over here that have been adopted, like in the face of this, you know, insane crisis this year, everywhere you look, there's, you know, a street's been shut down so they can put tables outside, or like a whole, you know, quarter of the town has been shut down. Or, you know, these different initiatives. There's one up the road here. I live in Salford Quays and I live right beside Media City. And that's where like the BBC and Coronation Street and ITV, that's where they're all based here. It's gorgeous. They've got this lovely new initiative called Box on the Docks, where they've literally just thrown it up. It's 30 greenhouses and sheds.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
So they've basically, I assume it's the council or Media City or whatever, they've given each of these to a different artist living, I assume, in Manchester. Mm. They've come in and decorated them all, and then you can rent one of them out for 2 hours, and there's all restaurants around there, and then you can have like a little romantic dinner and stuff in them, and it's all socially distanced, and they've speakers so you can listen to your own music and stuff like that. And I'm just, you know, we've got this amazing nighttime economy advisor called Sasha Lord over here, and we worked with him on our online Manchester Pride Festival the other week. Just a great guy who I feel like the people who are quite senior in the council here, and you know, at that kind of level, like working with the mayor, Andy Burnham, like they're just so passionate about making this city work. Like everywhere you look, there's apartment build blocks going up. They're being built everywhere you look. Unfortunately, I live right beside one of them. Sorry, but I suppose to me, it's a city that's doing its best to accommodate the residents. And I just never felt like that with Dublin. I felt like I was being pushed away. I had a good full-time job, and I struggled every month to meet ends meet because of the rent that I was paying, extortionate transport costs, extortionate cost of a night out, like an unviable place to live for a lot of people, you know, and I was working full time. So I think coming over here and in this pandemic and seeing how the city has really done its best to adapt, it has made me realize what that Dublin is lacking in quite significantly in that regard. But I think because it's a much bigger place, you've got like the individual city councils, you know, and mayors and mayor's offices and stuff like that. And, you know, there's obviously more universities and there's more opportunities. And that's the other thing. Like I would probably never get a job like this in Dublin or in Ireland, full stop. You know, there's just so much happening over here.
Why do you think that is? There's not really
any organization like Manchester Pride. I mean, I know there's Dublin Pride, but it's pretty much all volunteers and it's, you know, it's a wonderful organization, but it's not somewhere that would hire somebody like me, for example, which is completely understandable. Whereas Manchester Pride, because it's so much bigger, it's a much bigger team and there's kind of allowances made then for being able to hire like an ally or, you know, somebody with my kind of, you know, experience or whatever. But yeah, no, it is such a shame. I think there needs to be a big shake-up in Dublin. And I know Hazel has just become the mayor of Dublin and I would expect amazing things from her. I think she's going to be amazing for the city and hopefully she gets to do loads of great stuff. But yeah, I think when you go other places, you realize what Dublin could be. It's such a beautiful city and it's full of the most incredible people. It's such a lovely place. Just ordinary, normal, decent people are just being driven out of that city. It's not a city that is working to accommodate the residents. It's a city that's working to accommodate tourists.
Yeah. So we're coming up to the end and I just wanted to ask you one last question, and that is, what advice would you give to the teens of today regarding social media and activism?
Okay, teens of today, social media. I would say to be aware that, you know, especially now, like screenshotting and, you know, stuff, it's possible that you could put something out there and maybe have a second thought about it being out there and then like it would never go away. So maybe, you know, to kind of just think of the persona, the kind of version of you that you want people to know potentially forever. You know, you always see people getting, you know, cancelled or whatever because they wrote, you know, 10 years ago is coming up. I think it's all just, you know, not to be, you know, real fluffy about it, but to just be a bit kinder because, you know, you do see a lot of very, very strange stuff, especially on TikTok. Like that TikTok is a dark place. People telling people to kill their kids and all on it. Like I seen it today on Twitter. Yeah, absolutely mind-boggling stuff. Just be careful. I personally don't understand why we don't talk more about, like, I think basically every year like a report comes out and it's like 9 out of 10 teens admit to speaking to a stranger online, you know, and it's this big scaremongering, fear-mongering thing, and I'm like, I've been bloody speaking to strangers online all day. You know what I mean? I'm fucking, do you think I know 20,000 people or whatever? Interacting with all day. I'm like, I've been talking to strangers online, you know, some of my best friends started out with strangers online. You know, we need to, I mean, that's not really advice for teenagers,
but normalize talking to strangers.
We just need to move on from like it being this scary thing when most bloody people do it like at least once a day. So I would say if you're a teenager, maybe like talk to your parents and, you know, maybe
educate them.
Try and explain that, like, you know, maybe you are like a young LGBTQ person who lives down the country who feels like the only person like them, and you've maybe joined a forum or something, but maybe you could, you know, talk to your folks about it and just say, look, this is something I'm doing. I'll let you know if I come across anything dodgy. Like, I'm not going to meet anybody, maybe meet up with anybody. But I don't know. It's just, I think parents just need to be a little bit more aware and not put our heads in the sand about the fact this is happening, you know. So I suppose maybe that, but like, I mean, obviously I have no kids, I'm not an expert on it, but I just think that's a conversation for another day. And in terms of activism, yeah, I think teenagers are amazing. I mean, look at like Greta Thunberg and all these big movements around, like, you know, climate change and stuff like that. I'd say, if I'm being honest, just to be careful. There's a fucking lot of nasty people out there. There's a lot of nasty people online. There's a big, you know, rise at the moment with fascism and, I mean, for want of a better word, Nazism, basically, all over the world and in Ireland. We've seen it a lot over the last... So you might think that you're going to a certain protest for a certain thing and it could attract a very, very dodgy crowd. So just be careful and let your folks know where you're going and, you know, check in with people. You can become very impassioned at protests, especially if there's like an anti, you know, if you're at an anti-racism protest and a load of, you know, fucking proud racists show up like that, yeah, it can get very hairy. Like, don't put your bloody life on the line, you know, for some Aegis whose Twitter profile picture is, you know, a dog wearing a fucking flat cap. Like, it's just not worth the hassle. So just to kind of, if you're doing like on the ground activism, like going to protests, which I think is important, I think it's great, just to watch yourself and be careful. And it's not always happy bringing signs and all fun and games. They can actually get a little bit nasty, as we saw the other week. Wear a mask.
Piece of advice is wear a mask. So where can they find you? I know people probably know you on Twitter, but where else can people find you?
Well, I'm on Instagram and that's just Holly Short. So I don't really use Instagram as much as I use Twitter. I find Instagram a little bit more boring. But yeah, I love Twitter. So more the merrier over on Twitter. I think that's it. I don't really use LinkedIn. I'm not one of, not one of those LinkedIn people. Sometimes I do, but yeah, don't follow me there.
Yeah, so thank you so much. Thanks for the chat. That was great. And I hope you enjoyed that.
I did, actually. It's a little trip down memory lane.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Tell Me About It. We want to be inclusive and chat to the Shona community to share their stories for Series 2. If you've experienced any of the topics discussed in this episode, a story to share, or just want to be part of our community, email info@shona.ie.